The Iranian president calls for active cooperation among Persian Gulf countries as he arrives in Qatar for an official visit. France says the Russian and U.S. presidents have agreed in principle to hold a summit on easing tensions over Ukraine. And so do warplanes bomb a residential area in northwestern Yemen, killing a civilian and injuring 10 others. From our Tehran headquarters, this is World News. I'm Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi is in Doha, the capital of Qatar, at the start of a two-day state visit aimed at discussing regional issues. Raisi was officially received at the Emir Divan, the administrative office of the Qatari Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. The enhancement of ties between Iran and Qatar and closer cooperation among Persian Gulf countries are the main goals of the visit. The president will also hold meetings with other senior officials, ministers of foreign affairs, oil, roads, as well as cultural heritage and tourism, are accompanying Raisi on the trip. On Tuesday, he will address the sixth summit of the Gas Exporting Countries Forum in Doha. More on the agenda is the signing of several agreements and memorandums of understanding. This is Raisi's first visit to the Persian Gulf neighbor since becoming president in June. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman complains about a lack of result by the Western side to make necessary decisions in the talks to revive the 2015 deal, the JCPOA. Saeed Khatibzadeh says the talks have diminished in scope, but outstanding issues are the toughest, most serious, and most significant yet. He has stressed that the Iranian team will not compromise on the rights and interests of the nation. He also urged European leaders to focus on the negotiations at hand, show some initiative and flexibility, and avoid making political statements and raising new issues unrelated to the JCPOA. Also on Monday, Iran's top security officials said that the talks between Iran and the remaining signatories to the JCPOA will continue until a result is reached. Hadi Shamkhani says negotiations with the U.S. is not an agenda of the Iranian delegation because, as he put it, such talks will not be the source of any progress. There's been an aviation accident in northwestern Iran. A plane has crashed in the province of East Azerbaijan. The F-5 fighter jet crashed into a sports hall and hit the wall of an adjacent school in the city of Tabriz. Both pilots were killed. A pedestrian also lost his life, but fortunately the school was closed at the time of the accident. Firefighters were immediately dispatched to a location to put out the fire. Emergency personnel have also been working to clear out the site. A spokesman for Iran's army says that the aircraft experienced a technical failure during a routine training mission, and the pilot was forced to direct it to a little populated area to minimize human losses. And that perhaps being the reason why the pilots did not have time to eject. The U.S. signaling its readiness for a diplomatic solution to the stand-up watch over Ukraine, while at the same time wielding the threat of sanctions against Moscow. The White House says President Joe Biden has accepted, in principle, to meet with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, but only if Russia hasn't invaded Ukraine by then. President Emmanuel Macron of France had pitched the idea of a summit on security and strategic stability in Europe to both leaders. Paris says that Putin has also agreed in principle to the meeting. The U.S. and its allies accuse Russia of planning an invasion of Ukraine, a charge that Moscow denies. Washington says if Moscow does attack, it will be targeted with swift and unprecedented sanctions. The White House has even prepared an initial package of sanctions that includes barring U.S. financial institutions from processing transactions for major Russian banks.
World leaders participated in the 58th Munich Security Conference in Germany, which is held annually. This year's conference was dominated by the Ukraine crisis, as major Western powers accused the Kremlin of zeroing in on an imminent invasion of Ukraine. In the conference, the U.S. Vice President, Kamala Harris, announced that Washington and its allies will impose significant and unprecedented economic costs on Russia if it further invades Ukraine.
We will impose far-reaching financial sanctions, and export controls. We will target Russia's financial institutions and key industries.
Harris also added the U.S. will not stop with economic measures, but will further reinforce the eastern flank of NATO. Harris said some 6,000 additional service members are already deployed to Romania, Poland, and Germany. The official also noted that some 8,500 troops in the United States are on high alert. Also, another high-profile attendee in the 2022 Munich Security Conference, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, said Britain could block Russian companies from raising capital in London and has passed legislation to widen sanctions on Russian businesses and individuals if the country invades Ukraine. Johnson also stated that Russia would pay a heavy military price if it invaded Ukraine. Britain has already sent hundreds of troops to Poland to support NATO's eastern flank. However, the chairman of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Eisinger, has highlighted the need for dialogue to resolve the differences. He said our world is in danger, traditional certainties are crumbling, threats and vulnerabilities are multiplying, and the rules-based order is increasingly under attack. He noted that the need for dialogue has never been greater. Meanwhile, Russia has time and again denied any intention to invade its western neighbor. It argues that it's deployed the military near Ukraine's borders to protect itself amid NATO's eastward expansion. Also, in a major step toward de-escalation, last week Moscow withdrew some of its troops near the Ukrainian border after completing military exercises.
The U.S. president has again said that Russia could invade Ukraine within days. Biden has warned that in case a war happens, it will close the window for diplomacy. Washington has even gone as far as stating that Russia may use a false flag attack to create a pretext for invasion. Both Ukraine and Germany toned down that rhetoric at the Munich Security Conference and advised against hyping up the crisis. And all this brings into question the U.S. motives for pushing the narrative on a Russian invasion.
The U.S. President Joe Biden has ramped up his rhetoric against Russia amid mounting tension in Eastern Europe. He once again repeated his claim that Washington had intelligence showing his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, has made up his mind to invade Ukraine.
We have reason to believe the Russian forces are planning to and intend to attack Ukraine in the coming week, in the coming days. We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people.
Speaking at the White House, Biden warned that war will close the window for diplomacy with Moscow. Biden also said Western countries won't deploy troops in Ukraine, but will continue to bolster their defensive capabilities. Earlier, the White House said Washington and its allies are working on a sanctions package in case of a Russian invasion. This is while Italy says the bans should not target energy imports from Russia. This could throw the EU economy into mayhem or even negatively affect Russia's gas supplies to Europe. The EU is Russia's biggest trade partner. Nearly 38% of Russia's exports went to the EU, while over 36% of Russia's imports came from Europe. Russia is also the origin of 26% of EU's oil imports and 40% of EU's gas imports.
I don't think Russia cares so much and worries so much about Western sanctions, because Russia proved for the years, in spite of Western pressure and different sanctions, capable to sustain and even improving slowly, not so good as before, its economy. So sanctions are not the main threat to Russia.
The U.S. accuses Russia of planning an attack on Ukraine, but says that is not true. Therefore, the latest warnings, based on unfounded accusations that a Russian invasion of Ukraine is just around the corner, would further complicate the situation at this critical time.
Now moving on, Saudi warplanes have launched fresh airstrikes on residential areas in Yemen, killing one person and wounding 10 others. Fighter jets hit a house in the town of Abs, northwestern Hajjah province. Ansar movement condemned the air raid, saying that the Saudi attacks against civilians amount to war crimes and terrorism. Saudi Arabia and some of its allies launched a war on Yemen in March 2015. devastating the country's key infrastructure. Hundreds of thousands of people, mostly civilians, have been killed in the assaults. Millions more have been displaced, while half of the population is facing hunger due to air, land, and sea blockade. The UN says that Yemen is the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. Meanwhile, the Yemeni army says it has thwarted an attack by the Saud-led coalition on the strategic city of Harat, inflicting heavy losses on the enemy. Army spokesman Yahya Sariyat denied allegations that the Saud-led coalition had taken control of the northwestern city in Hejaz Governorate. The Yemeni army says a mountainous area was also liberated. As a result, some 200 Saudi forces and mercenaries were killed, and almost double that number were wounded. The army added that over 40 armored and military vehicles were also destroyed, while two spy drones were shut down. The army is confronting the Saud-led coalition forces and their loyalists on several fronts inside Yemen. Abdullatif al-Washali in Sana'a tells us about the goals behind the army operations in different parts of Yemen. He also explains why the Saud-led coalition is fighting the Yemeni army in the city of Harat.
The Yemeni army is only defending the Yemeni lands, but now they are advancing towards Saudi territories and taking control of new Saudi territories. The Yemeni army says these areas are actually are Yemeni territories, and the Riyadh agreement, the Al-Taif agreement, which was assigned decades ago, it will now be reconsidered by the Yemeni government to see which lands are belonging to the Yemeni people. The Yemeni army is only defending the Yemeni lands. They did not escalate the operations in Harada, but it was escalated by the Saudi coalition forces, maybe to push the Yemeni army to stop attacking Marib. The Yemeni army is determined to liberate the city of Marib. They are encircling now the city, and they have been encircling the city for a few months now, but you know that they didn't want to attack the civilians inside the city. They want only to force the forces inside the city to leave.
The United Nations are denouncing the Tel Aviv regime for its plan to evict Palestinian families from their ancestral homes in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of the occupied Al-Quds. Stephen Dujarric, a spokesman for UN Secretary General, slammed the move as a violation of international law. He said that the UN has repeatedly called for an end to the forced eviction and destruction of homes in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. The UN official urged Tel Aviv to adopt necessary measures to protect civilians, including Palestinian refugees. He made a comment after a UN delegation visited the occupied Palestinian territories. Sheikh Jarrah has been a flashpoint, witnessing crackdowns by Israeli forces on the Palestinians protesting at the expulsion of dozens of families in favor of Israeli settlers. In the Canadian capital, Ottawa, workers are cleaning up trash after weeks-long demonstrations in the city against the government's COVID vaccine mandates. Police on Sunday smashed the windows of vehicles abandoned in the downtown core of the capital to search and tow them away. The city witnessed 2 days of tense standoffs and nearly 200 arrests since the truckers began their agitation on January the 28th. Protesters used hundreds of trucks and vehicles to block the city center. The so-called Freedom Convoy then spread to other cities. Demonstrators also blocked several border crossings with the U.S., disrupting transportation and trade. That prompted Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to invoke rarely used emergency powers. Now, in the United States, the mayor of New York City is facing a backlash, and that after he announced a plan to ban homeless people from entering subways. The Coalition for the Homeless, an advocacy group, hit back at Eric Adams' plan, dismissing it as a repeat of failed strategies. The group said it was sickening that the mayor would use terms like cancer to refer to the homeless. The reaction came after Adams announced the crackdown on homeless people sheltering in the subway. Under the plan, he said, steps would be taken to cleanse the city's subway of homeless who use them as a place to sleep and handle or threaten other passengers. The announcement has drawn the ire of homeless advocates and others who believe heavy-handed approach won't solve the problem. A political scientist, Wilmer Leon, who joined us a short time ago, blames the capitalist system in the United States for the rising homelessness in that country.
The cancer is not the homeless. The cancer is the unbridled, monopolistic, vulture capitalist system in this country that causes homelessness in the first place. We have these ideas in this country such as the Protestant work ethic and the rugged American. And these types of ideas blame the individual for their inability to provide affordable housing for themselves, overlooking the fact that this is the wealthiest economy in the world, and we have the largest homeless problem than any other industrialized country. If China can bring 250 million people out of poverty in China, why can't the United States do the same thing?
Atlantic storm Eunice is battered northwestern Europe. It hit western England Friday, powering its way all the way to capital London, killing more than a dozen people and leaving behind a trail of destruction. The storm has dissipated and a cleanup operation is underway, but has fueled a debate about the UK's resilience against such incidents. Said Puriza reports from London.
Cleaning up the mess left behind by storm Eunice that battered the UK this week. With record speeds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour, much of the country from Scotland to England felt the force of the storm's temper. Footage posted to social media showed trees fall, history be realigned, railway travel disrupted, planes struggling to land, iconic landmarks damaged. The capital, London, issued its first ever rat severe weather warning. Here, too, authorities asked residents not to leave home.
So the message to Londoners is, whilst the Met Office has the red weather warning, stay indoors. A storm Eunice is the worst storm we've faced in 3 decades. It's really important we don't inadvertently put ourselves in harm's way by being outdoors.
Many heeded the warning and stayed home. Others did not. 3 people were killed.
One of those killed, a woman in her 30s, traveling in a car with a man of the same age here in North London when this tree fell onto their vehicle, killing her, but sparing her partner.
Eunice knocked out electricity for tens of thousands of households on its path. The government had already been warned that the UK lacks the resilience to deal with storms, particularly in terms of electricity infrastructure. Here in London, there is a sense of worry about what's to come next. Eunice was predicted to be the first storm in 30 years and certainly won't be the last. The clear-up phase is well underway now, but the wider debate about the state of the UK's resilience against storms is only just gathering pace. Saeed Puriza, London.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Economic divide.
Does Europe have an energy crisis? You bet it does. What about inflation? That too. With some EU countries, they're worse than 30 years. So what are authorities doing about it? Is it only because of COVID, or are there other factors like corporate greed? Hi, I'm Kavit Tawai, and in this edition of Economic Divide, we will look at Europe's energy crisis, then a look at their economies with a case study in the UK, where things are not going well there. Coming up in today's program, the European Union's energy crunch. Almost all countries are suffering from an energy price increase. In the UK, it's over 50%. How are they going to cope with that there? Then, EU inflation. Record inflation is being registered, the worst in 30 years for some countries, like the UK, like for Germany. For the poor, it's a matter of eating or heating. The middle class is also not exempt. They have been affected. And then, finally, a special look at the UK and its economy. It's being hit from all sides. High energy costs on the one side. Then you have record inflation. And then you have tax increases. The road to recovery will be a long one.
The cost of living is rising in Europe against the backdrop of a crisis triggered by the COVID pandemic and tensions between Ukraine and Russia. According to the latest data, inflation across the continent has reached a new high. Consumer prices have jumped 5.1% from January of last year, up from 5% in December. That is more than what analysts had estimated. Rising inflation indicates that underlying inflationary pressures continue to build in the 19-country bloc. Soaring food prices is squeezing on family budgets. But the main reason for the rising costs in Europe is blamed on higher energy prices. Energy prices rose by 28.6% in January in the 19 Eurozone countries. The highest national inflation rate was 12.2% in Lithuania, while France had the lowest at 3.3%. Figures show that consumer prices in Germany went up 3.1% in 2021, the largest spike in 30 years. Spain is also going through a tough economic time. The country's annual inflation jumped to 6.7% at the end of 2021. Italy's inflation rate has reached a 26-year high of 4.8%, mainly due to the increase in energy prices. Government of Italy has spent more than 8 billion euros since July to curb hikes in retail energy bills. The increases are blamed on rising fossil fuel prices, which in turn is blamed on the tensions between Ukraine and Russia.
By contrast, although uncertainties related to the pandemic have abated somewhat, geopolitical tensions have increased. Furthermore, persistently high costs of energy could exert a stronger than expected drag on consumption and investment. The pace at which supply bottlenecks are resolved is a further risk to the outlook for growth and inflation.
Perhaps like no other time, governments are facing a monumental challenge of how to deal with surging prices from energy to food, which have resulted in inflation. And people are suffering as a result, as evidence in some of the social media posts. But first, the bad news got worse. The EU Commission said the forecast for inflation was revised upwards compared to the autumn forecast. This reflects the effects of high energy prices, but also the broadening of inflationary pressures on other categories of goods since autumn. Next, we pose the question, why are energy prices so high in Europe? Wholesale energy prices are soaring across Europe, especially in the UK, Spain, and Portugal, because of shortages of the supply of natural gas from Norway and from Russia. And in case you are wondering how many European countries are suffering from high energy prices, the worst hit is the UK, followed by Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Slovakia. And then followed by the rest. Now comes some reasons behind the spike in energy prices, and as evident by the following posts, many are blaming the U.S. for Europe's energy woes. While Europe listens to U.S. political demands and continues to stall the completed Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which would provide needed relief amid record energy prices, Russia just announced a 30-year contract to supply gas to China with a new pipeline. Tweet said, indeed, by interfering in the delivery of much-needed natural gas supplies to the EU, it is evident the U.S. and its agents in Europe are using energy resources as a weapon. As a result, many people, especially among the poor elderly, will die this winter. Not good news there overall from the social media posts. Well, joining us for this segment of the program is Herman Kelly. He's a president of the Irish Freedom Party and a former journalist who joins us from Dublin, Ireland. Herman Kelly, welcome. The cost of living in European countries rising. You got inflation in the Eurozone that's also recording new highs. Consumer prices have jumped 5.1% from January of last year. How can any of these countries, do you think, see any reprieve from these rising prices, from inflation, especially when it comes to energy prices?
Hello, Covey. Well, we're at a point of very high inflation now, kind of record high. I think it's the highest in 20 years. And taxation is very dangerous. It is pretty much a tax on the poor because they're asset poor and they have a lower disposable income. So prices go up, their wages stay the same, and they're less well off. Whereas the rich people who have many, like, for instance, houses and assets, the price of their assets go up, so they don't lose as much. So it really is a very dangerous time and a tax on the poor.
All right, let's bring in Urs Unkopf. He's the Federal Managing Director of BWA, Global Economic Network, who joins us from Berlin. Urs Unkopf, welcome. We're looking at the European governments that are being urged to step in to deal with the rising prices, i.e. inflation or gas prices. And, of course, you've had already this input from the central banks in terms of printing money like crazy over the past couple of years since the pandemic started. How do you foresee things moving forward?
Good morning from Berlin. This is a very important question because the European Union has decided to diversify its sources of energy supply. We have to acknowledge that fossil fuels, namely oil and natural gas, will play a crucial role in the future of European energy policy and also for managing that energy transition. Natural gas, especially for Germany, has been always a very sustainable, a very secure source. And it is Germany's intention to diversify its sources, but also to strengthen established partnerships.
Okay, that was Urs Unkopf, the Federal Managing Director of BWA Global Economics Network. Time now for the InfoNews section of the program. Lots of news with an economic flavor from this past week, so here goes. First, Ukraine. The crisis continued this past week unabated. European banks, however, are panicking over the Russia-Ukraine crisis. The most exposed banks are in Italy, France, and Austria. Now, why are they panicking? Well, they've described the potential disconnection of Russia from SWIFT as what they have said is an atomic bomb for the industry. But the SWIFT disconnection, well, it remains a distinct possibility because the crisis is still ongoing. So that's news that's basically a work in progress.
First, we need to prepare very strong political and economic sanctions package. I would not exclude things like sanctioning Nord Stream 2, disconnecting from SWIFT. And I think that Russia needs to know in advance what is the economic price tag.
Next up, indebted Americans. It's unbelievable. U.S. Americans sinking deeper into debt. Last year, it actually marked the biggest annual spike in U.S. household debt in 14 years. The total household debt surged by a whopping $1 trillion. Now, this is the biggest such increase since the year 2007. The total household debt held by U.S. families at this point amounts to a figure that's quite unbelievable, $15.58 trillion, and that's growing. Moving on to the African continent, you have a drought that's happening there. The Horn of Africa is where it's happening, and it's threatening 13 million with hunger. So that's quite a number. The region is grappling with this drought that's been caused by the driest conditions since the year 1981. Now, this obviously is a major concern because of the total number of people that are involved here that are facing acute hunger. The WFP regional director, he has come out also sounding the alarm bell. And some of the things that he has said about this concerns harvest. In a tweet that he mentioned, harvests are ruined, livestock dying, and hunger is growing as recurrent drought affects 13 million people in the Horn of Africa. So obviously this needs to be addressed. And finally, we move on to something that is this is really unbelievable when you think about it. It's the Pfizer profits, and it's a bombshell. Financial results on COVID-19 vaccine sales were released, $1 million an hour with the profits from Pfizer on this vaccine that they have released to the world, which is not really all of the world. Oxfam, first of all, has said this is clear evidence of how Pfizer has used its monopoly to enrich its shareholders at the expense of almost half the world's population. But just 1% of Pfizer's vaccines have been delivered to low-income countries. So you have that going on and shows how much potential there is for more sales for Pfizer. So you go figure, profits versus lives.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now for our in-depth section of the program. As we have covered in this program, energy prices across pretty much all of Europe have increased dramatically. But the country that we're going to put in focus here is the UK, whose economy is being battered from several different directions all at once. First, a look at energy bills in that country, set to rise dramatically starting from the month of April. The percentage, 54%. 54% per household. And that's Britain's energy regulator capping the increase, or else it would have been even higher. But what many people in the UK don't realize are the additional costs that come in their bill every month. Things like wholesale costs, network costs, social and environmental obligations, other direct costs, whatever that means, supplier operating costs and margin, and then taxes like VAT, something which the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson promised to eliminate or at least reduce after Brexit. Of course, that did not happen. Let's now take a look at the price increase relative to the amount of money an average Brit makes. The average pay comes in at about £2,000 or just a little over £2,000 per month. It has been estimated families are going to now face a £1,200 a year hit to their incomes as the energy price cap is raised again for the month of April. Now, the people in the UK, like some other parts of the world, suffer from what's called fuel poverty. What is the definition of fuel poverty? Well, simply put, the condition of being unable to afford to keep one's home adequately heated. And that's something that the UK is suffering from. Now, let's put that into context. More than 2,700 deaths were reported in England and in Wales because they couldn't afford to keep their homes warm. And that was in the year 2011. Okay? Now, let's fast forward to January 2022. Fuel poverty could hit the highest level since records began unless the government acts. 6 million UK homes unable to pay their bills after the price hike now. And then 4 million who are already fuel poor, which then 2 million are going to slip into fuel poverty. So when you add these two, it comes out to that 6 million figure that we mentioned there. So obviously that's quite a number. Now, the government response, what have they done? Well, the UK Finance Minister, Rishi Sunak, he's announced a plan to ease pressure, as he has said, £350 of support. That includes £200 off energy bills from the month of October to be repaid over 5 years from next year. Okay? Now, at the same time, he warned households that they will have to adjust to even higher prices in the future. Let's take a listen to what he said.
Without government action, today's increase in the price cap would leave households needing to find, on average, an extra £693 this year. In total, we're helping the vast majority of families pay their energy bills with £350. Our plan is right. It is fair. And I hope it will help ease the anxiety that millions of people feel about rising energy costs by sharing the burden between us all.
We're going to find out if that helps or not. Obviously, it's better than nothing, to say the least here. Now, the pound, or pounding, I should say, doesn't stop there. Sorry for the pun. There is the issue of inflation for the UK. The UK is facing a wider cost of living crisis with inflation soaring. Now, what it has come in at is 7%, and that is a 30-year high. And that figure could be adjusted. Putting that aside, then comes another issue, taxes. Taxes on earned income and shareholder dividends, they're also set to rise, 2% increase. So that's another hit that the UK economy, for the average UK, or for the people in the UK, that they're going to take a hit on that. And finally, energy companies raking in record profits. I mean record profits. Let's take a look at Shell first. For the year 2021, $6.4 billion in profits. Figure for 2020, $393 million. Then we move on to BP. 2021, $12.82 billion in profits, while in the year 2020, they actually posted a loss of $5.7 billion. That's quite a profit. And that's drawn the anger of many in the UK that say, wait a minute, you guys should share some of this increase in our energy bills that's happening as a result. All right, let's try to break this down a little bit and see what our guest thinks about this. We are going to have our guest rejoin us for a breakdown. Herman Kelly is president of the Irish Freedom Party and former journalist who rejoins us from Dublin, Ireland. All right, Herman Kelly, welcome. So when you take a look at what has happened in the UK, it's quite incredible with the energy prices at 53%. And then, of course, we're looking at the inflation, taxes, et cetera. How can the UK see any relief from this, especially how this is affecting the middle class also?
Sadly, for the whole of Europe, it's just not the UK who are experiencing the increase in energy prices. That's kind of universal, as far as I can see, around the EU and certainly in Ireland. Inflation is at 5%, and energy prices have gone up a lot as well, even within the last year. But inflation is certainly starting to bite.
The rising costs has raised calls on EU leaders to help the continent develop more reliable energy sources and help the transition towards green energy. The UK is no longer an EU member, but in terms of the economy, it's not faring better either. In December 2021, Britain's inflation soared to a 30-year high, and the upward trend has since continued. The inflation rate is expected to increase further in the coming months, to close to 6% in February and in March. And the Bank of England says it expects it to peak at around 7.25% in April. Surveys show more than half of Britons have perceived the major increase in energy costs in the last few months.
Turning to inflation, UK consumer price inflation rose to 5.4% in December, well above its 2% target, and almost one percentage point higher than expected at the time of the November monetary policy report. Most of the overshoot in inflation relative to the target continues to reflect the more general rise in the price of globally traded goods. Higher energy prices explain nearly one percentage point of the rise in inflation since September. But rising domestic cost pressures, driven by a tight labour market, have also added to the upward pressure on consumer prices, albeit to a lesser extent.
And 85% of Britons say that they have noticed an increase in the cost of groceries. Energy prices are also rising sharply in Britain. Britain's energy regulator has said that the energy price cap that limits the amount of energy suppliers charge their customers will increase by half for about 22 million customers from this April. That will come in at 53% increase. The British government announced that millions of households will also receive energy bill discounts totaling £350 to combat the impacts of the rise in energy prices. But analysts say that is not nearly enough. The move has been criticized for falling short of what was needed to root out the problem,
especially for the poorest. Critics also say the government's response to the crisis has been too slow, despite high energy prices for months. The UK is already reeling from the economic aftermath of Brexit, with supply chain disruptions and shortages of skilled labourers.
It is very alarming how the rise in energy prices in Europe is going to affect the poor, or the ones who are in poverty. First of all, let us differentiate between who is poor and who lives in poverty. A poor person is the one who earns an income that does not fully cover all their necessities. A person in poverty is someone who is merely trying to survive. The energy crisis is sure to worsen poverty for millions of Europeans. According to Eurostat figures, around 31 million Europeans are living in energy poverty. One environmental NGO, Friends of the Earth, has said it's a tragedy that in one of the richest continents in the world, one in four European households this winter or more are having to make the decision between heating their homes and having food on the table. The 31 million figure, however, may be underestimated because there is no common definition of energy poverty across Europe. This makes it difficult to know the extent of the problem. For instance, the European Commission, in the 2021 State of the Energy Union report, calculated in 2019 that 50 million people were living in energy poverty, almost 20 million more than the EU's latest estimates. It further added that this number could rise to 80 million because of the current energy price crunch combined with the impact of the COVID-19 crisis. Now, this problem is not just for the ones classified as poor. It's now expanding to other classes of society in Europe. This is something the European Commission has also acknowledged. While the recent price hikes affect everyone, the energy poor and the low and lower middle income households are most impacted because they spend significantly higher shares of their incomes on energy. Governments have offered solutions, short-term ones, but the question remains whether these will be enough, especially since it's not known how long this energy crisis will last. Some of these solutions include temporary tax reductions and lump sum payments to help pay the energy bills. Spain, France, Italy, and Greece have all brought in measures like these to help vulnerable households. But the most alarming figure before the start of the pandemic was the actual level of poverty, not fuel, or the energy poverty that existed in Europe. Already before the pandemic, one in five people in the EU were at risk of poverty and social exclusion, or around 110 million people. In 2020, an estimated 21.9% of the EU population, or some 96.5 million people, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion. Okay, that does it for this segment of the program. I'm Matti, and until next time, it's goodbye.
In conclusion, the energy price in Europe is here to stay for the time being. Tensions between Ukraine, over Ukraine, between Russia and the U.S. are persisting. But there's something bigger at play here, and that is the fact that you have the central banks that have printed so much money in order to help the economies, and that is going to hurt these economies. Putting that on top of the energy price hikes, the households across Europe are going to be suffering, and it remains to be seen whether their income is going to rise relative to inflation. Only time will tell. And that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. It was great having you with us. From Mika Bitafai and the entire team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him. and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan al-la'in al-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights, and we keep saying that one of the pillars of human rights is in fact justice. And now justice also, according to philosophers and theologians, it is the pillar of any community. Without it, community will fall, communities will suffer, societies will suffer. So we need the establishment of justice. And justice itself is a concept that needs to be applied. It needs someone to apply it and to uphold it. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he talks about the prophets in the Quran, he said he sent them to establish justice. لِيُقُومَ النَّاسَ بِالْقِسْطِ, so people could uphold the notion of justice. With Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, he was the hero and the champion of justice and applying justice. One of the things that was noticeable in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen and in the conduct of Amir al-Mu'mineen when it comes to justice and those who uphold it, especially leaders, rulers, kings, khalifs, or whatever you want to call them. He said that being in such a position, sometimes as long as you are not a divinely appointed leader by Allah, obviously being a prophet or being an imam, an immaculate, infallible imam, then you are not immune to mistakes. You will make mistakes. So since Amir al-Mu'mineen, he himself was outcasted from this position by the people and was given to other people, he said people needs to consult their leaders when they make mistakes. And he even was quoted saying, one who faces different opinions recognizes the spots of his own mistakes and errors. So when people come to me and tell me and give me their opinion, I can find out easily where my mistake is. So people have the right to speak out, and they have the right to be heard, and they have the right for things to change because they are more aware of it than the ruler or the leader himself. Because the leader and the rulers live in their castles while people are the one who are suffering. So sometimes they need to consult and speak to those leaders. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam has opened the door for people to come forward and speak to him and consult him and, you know, speak out their minds and their affairs. Whether though those who were before him and those who came after him, they did not give that to people. So the person who realizes mistakes arrives at truth and right actions, and then he needs to be able to have an open mind and listen to people. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, like I said, he acknowledged that fact. And he also said that people need to correct their mistakes once they realize they've made mistakes. He says correctness cannot be achieved by abandoning consultation. That me as a ruler, as a leader, if I want to abandon consulting and speaking to others and asking them for advice or asking them how things go, then surely I will make mistakes. Now, let us take a short break and we will continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, we were saying that Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, the commander of the faithful, he opened the door to people talking and raising their concerns and speaking out their minds and, you know, as we call it, the notion of consultation. He was open to that. And that was opened just to make sure that the rights of people are given, that justice is applied, that no one's right is being taken from them. Now, it does not behove a ruler to keep his door shut before people and try to achieve some object by keeping the people in the dark. Now, this is a very backward mentality that existed back in the day and still exists today in the most civilized nations, as we call them, the first nations or the first class world countries. The rulers, the parties in power, the government in power, their doors are completely shut. And people are in the dark. And if you look at America, at Europe, at a lot of countries, you'll find out that there is such a huge gap between people and their government, where you find so many people, millions of and millions of people, below the line of poverty, and they are suffering. The education is at the lowest. Healthcare at the lowest, poverty at its lowest points, while those in power, they have all the wealth. They're controlling everything. Now, is this what we call human rights? Is this what we call justice? The commander of the faithful, on the other hand, it draws attention to this point by saying, acquire light from a kindled lamp. You have to make sure that you draw yourself as a leader or as a government or as a person in power, that you have to draw yourself to people. You have to be a shining lamp towards them. You have to show them how things are and how things work. Not keep yourself away from them because they rely on you, especially if we talk about our civilized world today and the governments that we have. Those governments, obviously, from the apparent look, were elected by people, and people had to line up to elect them so they could serve them. But now they are in power, they are in the dark. The kings, the rulers, and presidents, and what have you, they are far away from the people. And people back then have been suffering, and we are still suffering. And justice and human rights, it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And such a day where we get to see justice being applied, it doesn't seem to be on sight. Now, obviously, we are waiting for the awaited Savior to come and establish justice once and for all to all mankind, so all mankind can prosper and in the notion of justice. We'll leave it here and we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.